Give it another few seconds so nobody complains that I started before 9 o'clock. I'd like to quote Rabbi Yosef Breuer, Zichron LeBracha. He was the grandson of Shamshon Falhirsch, who basically reestablished the Frankfurt Jewish community on American soil in Washington Heights, which we called Breuer's. Rabbi Breuer was one to say in his Mamaloshen, Frei is auch nicht pinklish. Early is also not on time. That is the epitome of being a yekka, right? Late is nothing to talk about. The word is not in the lexicon. But early is also not on time. And there's a lot of wisdom there because, you know, people who do try to come on time to shul, for example, and they walk in and they started already and the person was really on time. You know, some gabbai jumped the gun for whatever reason. And sometimes you miss a kaddish. Sometimes you miss in a mincha tefillah b'tzibur. Tefillah b'tzibur doesn't mean davening a shul where there are 10 people. Tefillah b'tzibur means starting Shmoneh Esrei together with the tzibur. So, you know, you can miss that if they don't start on time. Okay, so now it's on time, so now we can start. Right? Okay. Yeah. The page that we need today says Psulei Etrog. I just put out a few extras that I had even in Besefa Mitzvot Rambam or Dei Tishrei, what we were looking at the last few weeks, because I'm just going to just take a glance at it now. So even if you don't have it, you know, this is just a Be'al Peh orally. We're going to deal today with the two mitzvot of Sukkot. Normally, Sukkot has been orphaned from our shiurim because we always give shiurim on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and there's no shiur between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, so it gets left out. It just gets left out. So this year, I figured today, even though we're a week before Yom Kippur, but we're also 2 weeks before Sukkot, and there won't be a shiur before Sukkot, and we said a few things about Yom Kippur already in the context of the listing of the mitzvot. We never exhaust anything. But in the listing of the positive mitzvot that we saw from that seventh unit of the 248 positive mitzvot, the Rambam had Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel, Parshat Emor in mind, no doubt. And then, of course, it's that which is out of sync that deserves our attention. We pointed it out already with regard to Rosh Hashanah, that the Rambam deliberately lifted the mitzvah of Shofar out of context because Parshat Emor is not the address for the mitzvah of Shofar. While there's a reference to Shofar, Zichron Truah Mikra Kodesh, but the proof text for the mitzvah is in Chumash Bamidbar, in Parshat Pinchas, Bamidbar Perek Kavtet. So that's why the Rambam moves it out of the sequential order of the Chagim. And after he finishes talking about Lishpot Bashvi'i Bo Shenemar B'yom HaShvi'i Mikra, I'm sorry, where he talks about the mitzvah of Kuf Samach Gimel, Lishpot Barishon Shel Chodesh HaShvi'i, that there's cessation of Malacha on the first of the seventh month, as it says B'yom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh, you would expect that we would have the mitzvah of Tkiat Shofar, and we do not. It jumps to the mitzvah of fasting on the 10th, which is Yom Kippur, and then the mitzvah of not doing melacha on the 10th, which is also Yom Kippur, and then it moves to the mitzvah not doing melacha on the first of that month, which is Chag HaSukkot, and then it goes to the mitzvah of not doing melacha on the 8th of Sukkot, and then afterwards there's the mitzvah of eating in Sukkah and taking the lulav, the Arba Minim, and only afterwards, Lishmo Kol Shofar, Rosh Hashanah. So this we explained already. I quoted Professor A.B. Feintuch from his Sefer Pikudei Yesharim. That seems to be the reason that the Rambam lifted Tzkiyah Shofar, did a cut and paste job, lifted it out of context and put it in the end of the listing. But even within Sukkot, there's a problem. Because in Kuf Samach Vav, it's the mitzvah to not do melacha on Chag HaSukkot, as it says, B'yom Rishon Mikra Kodesh. Now the next one is not to do melacha on the 8th, which we call Shmini Atzeret. But between the first and the eighth, we have the two mitzvot of Sukkah and Lulav. So why did the Rambam not place the mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah and taking the Lulav after the mitzvah of not doing melacha on the first? And then afterwards get to Shmini Atzeret. Shmini Atzeret is has been defined by Chazal as regel b'fnei atzmo. It's an independent Yom Tov. So while on some level it's connected to Chag HaSukkot, I mean, we call it Shmini. It's the eighth. The eighth of what? It's the eighth from day one. Vayom Rishon Shabbaton Vayom Shmini Shabbaton, as it says in Parshat Emor. So you can't deny it, except that it's not Sukkot. There's no mitzvah of Arba Minim, and there's no mitzvah of Sukkot. And while the Gemara tells us in Chutz La'aretz, and I'm sure many of us became Hasidim vis-a-vis this mitzvah, because the bare bones halacha is that in Chutz La'aretz you have to eat all your meals in the Sukkah, Shmini Atzeret, but we refrain from saying the bracha, Vitzivanu Leshev HaSukkah, because that would be an outright contradiction. You're making Kiddush, and you're davening, B'yom Shmini Atzeret HaChag HaZeh, or Shmini Chag Atzeret HaZeh, depends whether the Nusach Ashkenaz or Sfarad, but you're saying Shmini Atzeret in your Kiddush and your Tefillah. How can you then turn around and say Vitzivanu Leshev HaSukkah, where it's not Sukkot? So why is there a halacha of eating in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret? Because of Sveka D'Yoma, Yom Tov Sheni. Just like there's Yom Tov Sheni, the 16th could be the 15th. So the 21st could be the 20th, and the 22nd could be the 21st. So the 22nd of Tishrei is Shmini Atzeret, but maybe it's the 21st. You know, that's always the question of Sveka D'Yoma, of Yom Tov Sheni, Chutz La'aretz. So it's like a Yom Tov Sheni of Hashana Rabbah. So that's why it's a halacha to eat in the sukkah. What happened was the Hasidim downgraded that halacha, and I think many of us, many of us had the minhag, I'm the first one to raise my hand on this, that we did not eat in the sukkah on the night of Shmini Atzeret, but we made kiddush in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret in the morning, and then we went home to eat, went inside to eat. How many had that minhag? All right. We all lose. It means we're all against halacha. But this is just another example of so many where the Kabbalists, because the Hasidim derived this from the Kabbalah, almost vetoed outright halacha. No different than standing for Kiddush Friday night, which is outright against halacha. The halacha is supposed to sit for Kiddush. 90% of people stand for the entire Kiddush Friday night, so nobody has to worry. Nobody has to worry. After 120 years, the Kaddosh Baruch Hu will say, no, you stood for Kiddush. You know, all you do is just, start looking at all the Gedolei Yisrael that stood for Kiddush also, and you're fine. You're in good company with the 90.
Why is it you have to sit?
You have to sit because it's a loch of Seuda. The Rambam says, Ein Kiddush Ela B'mekom Seuda. Kiddush is the place. The place doesn't mean the address. It means the posture. You're sitting when you eat, you sit when you make Kiddush. That's why we sit for Birkat HaMazon. It also has to be B'mekom Seuda. You're not supposed to take a tiyul. And there's all kinds of halachot. What happens if you forget the bench and you did take a tiyul, you're somewhere? What's the distance that the halacha says you have to go back to your house? There's a whole discussion about this. Machlok beit shammai beit hillel even. How much you have to be careful that if you didn't bench and you remembered within 72 minutes, ooh, I didn't bench. But 72 minutes, if you get in a car, is far away. Is very far away. Question is, at what point do you have to turn around and bench at the place? So don't forget Birkat HaMazon. It's supposed to be in the place, and you're not walking around the house washing dishes while you're saying Birkat HaMazon. It's supposed to be sitting in the Makom Su'uda. And so too, Kiddush is B'Makom Su'uda. The reason the Kabbalists introduced the idea of standing, because they introduced another concept, that during Kiddush Friday night, you are welcoming the Shekhinah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, into your home as a Shabbos guest. And it would be inappropriate for you to be sitting when that happens. Yeah?
We stand for him.
No, you, what you really do is you stand for the preamble. Yom HaShishi is not Kiddush. I hate to break this to you. Yom HaShishi is testimony. And testimony, it says, V'amdu Shnei Anashim. The halacha is that witnesses in court testify standing up. So we're testifying to the fact that God created the world. That's a testimony to Vayvarach Elokim et Yom HaShvi'i Vayekadesh Oto. God created the world and He sanctified the day of Shabbat. So if He sanctified the day of Shabbat, let's sit down and eat. What's their Kiddush? Kiddush means I'm sanctifying. What exactly are you sanctifying? I'm jumping to a shear in 3 months from now. But then as they say, on one foot, al regel achad, there's an added strata of Kiddushah that we do sanctify Shabbat. And that's Kiddush. Kiddush means an act of sanctification. So on the one hand, we acknowledge that there is already a realm of Kedusha in Shabbat without us. That's Vayechulu. And it always started with Vaychulu Hashemayim V'aretz V'chotzvam. And then came the Kabbalists and said, you know what? If the pasuk before is Vayerev Avoka Yom HaShishi. Yom HaShishi is Yud Hey. Vaychulu Hashemayim is Vav Hey. Hey, that's Shem Hashem. So let's start with Yom HaShishi Vaychulu Hashemayim. So you now have Yud Kei Vav Kei Shem Havaya Shem Hashem. Fine. The only problem is the pasuk doesn't start Yom HaShishi. So they said, all right, say Vayerev Avoka Balachash, softly, an undertone, so that you announce Yom HaShishi Vaychulu Hashemayim, you have the Yud Kei Vav Kei. And then came the real tzaddikim and said, one second, the pasuk doesn't start with Vayerev Vavoke, it starts Vayaru Elokim et kol asher asa v'inei tov ma'od Vayerev Vavoke Yom HaShishi. So some people have a minute to start, you know, from there. Nobody starts from Bereshis, but they're right. Because then you never get to the kill to fill the fish. But So that's the reason why Chassidim and Chikha Balas stand. Now, a lot of people have this in the family tradition. The ones who did not have it as a family tradition were the Litvaks and Lita from Germany. They never had this minig. But from Eastern Europe, Hungary, and the areas that were influenced and impacted by the Chassidus, so they have this minig of standing. And it just carried over to so many of Klal Yisrael. There are many, many such minhagim. There was a great professor who lived not far from here. I knew his son, but I knew him also, Professor Yaakov Katz, he was a member of my shul al Nechama, but he had passed away long before I got there. He's one of the six Pras Yisrael laureates of my shul. I mean, it's a shul that sports six Pras Yisrael of Yom HaTzmud. So one was Professor Yaakov Katz. He was the mentor at Hebrew University of the Rav's son, Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, an expert in history, Jewish history of the Middle Ages. He wrote a whole book on the interchange and interface between Halacha and Kabbalah. And if you want to have a halachic source with this zero impact of Kabbalah, it's the Rambam. This I heard from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zechariah Levracha. There's zero Kabbalistic influence on the Rambam. It's pure, unadulterated halacha. That's it. But Rabbi Yosef Karo, Shulchan Aruch, he was a Mekubal. He was a Kabbalist. So there are Kabbalistic influences in the Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Yosef Karo. And the Ramah as well in Krakow, it was impacted by Kabbalah. So we are very much impacted by Kabbalah, whether we're Kabbalists or not, whether they ever looked at a Zohar or not, makes no difference. Our minhagim, many times, are influenced by Kabbalah. So now you have the fact that in the listing of the Rambam tells us not to do Melacha on the first day of Sukkot, but then doesn't go over to the mitzvot of Lulav, and sukkah first and lulav afterwards. There's a good reason why that order is correct, because we don't know why. And then Shmini Atzeret at the end, it should have been not doing melacha on Sukkot, and then sukkah, and then lulav, and then not doing melacha on Shmini Atzeret. But Ram doesn't have that. He has the not doing melacha on the first day and not doing melacha on the eighth day, and then he backtracks. Says, "And there's a mitzvah on the first day to take a sit in the sukkah and have a lulav. Two different mitzvot. Arbat minim. Why does he do that? Why is he do that? Just to prove that that Shmir Atzeret is regel b'fnei atzmo. It's an independent yomtov. We say shechianu on Shvi'i Shel Pesach, seventh day Pesach. We don't make shechianu neither on the candle lighting at the evening nor on kiddush." But on the Shmini Atzeret, both on candle lighting as well as in Kiddush, we say Shechianu. So you see that it's an independent Yom Tov. And it's an independent Yom Tov also for purposes of Avelut. It takes off a full 7 days of Shloshim. If somebody's Shiva came to an end before Sukkot, and now Sukkot is going to negate the Shloshim, so it's more than just 7 days or 8 days worth of Shloshim. The Shmini Atzeret itself takes into consideration 7 days of Yom Tov. 7 days of Shloshim get erased. Not only the first day, which means a total of 14 days get erased. And the person will have much less of Shloshim observance after Sukkot than this parallel would be after Pesach. Because Shvi'i Shel Pesach is just 1 day of Yom Tov being the seventh from the first. And Shmini Atzeret is an independent Yom Tov for many, many halachot. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Eliminate Shloshim. You're telling me
that's eliminate Shloshim. If yes and no, yes and no. It doesn't. If a person finished Shiva, let's get it right. If a person finished Shiva before Chag, you're quite correct. Then the Chag eliminates Shloshim. If a person the Chag broke up Shiva, which means he had, let's say, 2 days of Shiva, so there is Shloshim, but it's abbreviated.
No, but in the case, like say in the case.
somebody dies before Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
It's 2 days.
So Rosh Hashanah finished. Then Yom Kippur eliminates the Shloshim. Eliminates. Right. But if a person finished the Shiva if a person finished the Shiva because of Yom Tov Sukkot, the Shiva ended. So there's still Shloshim, but it's abbreviated. It's abbreviated because of the first day and Shmini Atzeret. Okay, now we got it right. Okay, so what might be the reason why the Rambam took Sukkah and Lulav out of the sequential order that would have been logical? So number one, let's just understand why Sukkah before Lulav. Why did he pick that? I mean, it's two mitzvot of the Chag. What does he do? What they call the Kisei Indandino? You know, Ini Mini Mini Mo. I mean, well, why did he do that? There's a good reason for this. There's a good reason why Sukkah appears in the list before Lulav. Well, when do we do the Lulav?
The
daytime. And Sukkah begins at nighttime already. So first, clearly, the obligation for Sukkah precedes the obligation for Abaminim. And that's very, very important, that the Sukkah begins at nighttime, because while, as I mentioned just a moment ago, there is Yom Tov Sheni for the mitzvah of Sukkah in Chutz La'aretz, that's why the halacha is that there is eating in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Again, forget about the discussion about Chassidim, of just making Kiddush. But my father, Avraham, used to tell me that this had something to do with identification with Eretz Yisrael. That the dropping of eating in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeret in Chutz La'aretz, and just a symbolic making Kiddush in the morning, was to identify with Eretz Yisrael, which has there's a flip side to it. In Chutz La'aretz, there was Chassidish places that did hakafot on the night of Shmini Atzeret. And it was the real singing and dancing that was on Sifrei Torah. But the night of Shmini Atzeret, they would take out the Sifrei Torah and just do a fast forward. I wish they would do a fast forward on Simchas Torah also by us. You know, not everybody likes the whole hullabaloo that goes on. But I remember this. They take out the Torah, and they just went seven akafas, you know, seven. What? In Chutz La'aretz. Chutz La'aretz. Well, it's not Nusach Svard. It's Chassidim. It's just that Chassidim daven Nusach Svard. So it's not Nusach Svard. It's that the Chassidim had such a minhag, and that was the flip side of the fact that today isn't really Sukkot anymore. So they were observing it as Simchat Torah, as real bona fide Shmini Atzeret, by doing hakafot, because in Eretz Yisrael there's hakafot on Shmini Atzeret, and by not sitting in the sukkah. So there was a real identification and a longing for Eretz Yisrael. I doubt it if many Chassidim in the world would agree with this statement, but it was a very Zionistic minhag. Very, very, very Zionist. It was a minhag. I know, they'd faint. They would start sitting in the sukkah, you know, on Shmini Atzeret, if they heard such a statement. But it's an idea that really fostered the idea that we really belong in Eretz Yisrael, and let's get started already with minhag Eretz Yisrael, and that's really where it comes from. But so there is Yom Tov Sheni for the mitzvah of sukkah. Did anybody ever hear of anybody in Chutz La'aretz taking a lulav and esrog on Shmini Atzeret? Nobody. So why is there Yom Tov Sheni for that? Why is there Yom Tov Sheni for Sukkah and there's no Yom Tov Sheni for Arba Minim? So this was explained by the Rav Zichron de Bracha in a shir many, many, many years ago, where he was dealing with something that his father said. He actually took issue with it, which was also interesting because his father was his primary Rebbe. He was a Rav Mufak and his father. And halachically, you can disagree. And he disagreed with his father. It had to do with Yom Tov Sheni of Sukkot, the first 2 days. We know that we're very careful about many, many, many things about the Lulav and Etrog and Adasim and Aravot. Things can go wrong. I mean, the title of the page is Psulei Etrog. Things can go wrong. Things can disqualify an Etrog, and they can disqualify a Lulav or Adasim and Aravot. Many of these disqualifications are ignored for Chol HaMoed. They're ignored for Chol HaMoed. Why? Because day one is biblical, is midoraita. Ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon. The mitzvah of Arba Minim is just the first day of Sukkot. Ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon. Look at source number one. Ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon pri etzadar kapot marim vanafei tzavot varbei nachal. So you take the four species on the first day. But usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokechem. Shivat Yamim. But before God, you celebrate with the Arba Minim for 7 days. What is Lefnei Hashem? What does it mean, Lefnei Hashem? I mean, the Ganenet, the kindergarten teachers in America would teach the kids, the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere, right? And but of course, see, Yishayahu Navi beat them to the punch. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvot, Melocho La'aretz Kvodo. That was all over. So what's Lefnei? What can't be Lefnei Hashem? So when the Torah says Lefnei Hashem, it limits the location. So it depends, the context actually teaches us what's the limitation. So Yonah Hanavi is livroach mi lifnei Hashem. How can you run away from God? I mean, it's silly. I mean, he's a Navi. He doesn't know he can't run away from God. So there, lifnei Hashem means Eretz Yisrael, because he was trying to escape the frequency of prophecy. He simply wanted to, he can't run away from God, but he wanted to resign as being a prophet. That's what he was going to do. So I figure, if I go to Tarshish, so Tarshish, if I translate this in a modern idiom, he wants to go to Mars. He wants to go to the furthest place that a human being can reach outside of Eretz Yisrael, because Tarshish is Spain, and after Spain you fell off, right? They didn't know, this is before Magellan. So I figure he's going to go to the edge of the world, and the Nevuah is not going to be there, so he's off the hook. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu teaches him that there are other ways that God communicates with man, through the forces of nature. And that's why he understands that the storm at the high sea, he was being contacted by God. He understands that. He can't run away from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he learns it the hard way. So that's Lefnei Hashem in Yonah. But Lefnei Hashem in the Torah many times means Yerushalayim. The eating of Maaser Sheni, Lefnei Hashem. Sometimes Lefnei Hashem is specifically Beit HaMikdash, to the exclusion of even Yerushalayim. So many, we sometimes require the assistance of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, to fine tune what the Lefnei Hashem is. And in this case, Usmachtem Lefnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim, what is the Lefnei Hashem? Where is there an obligation to take the Arba Minim beyond day one, but continue taking it from a biblical point of view? This is a pasuk in Chumash, for 7 days. Is it Yerushalayim? Or is it just the location, the immediate location of the Beit HaMikdash? That's a machloket between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi believes it's just the Beit HaMikdash, where there's an extension of Usmachtem Lefnei Hashem Elokechem Shivat Yamim. And the Rambam believes, he says it in the Mishnah commentary, Perusha Mishnah, that it includes all of Yerushalayim. And I say parenthetically, there are people today, when I say Yerushalayim, I do not mean the Yerushalayim of Nir Barkat, the municipal borders of Yerushalayim, but I'm talking about the areas of Yerushalayim that are still holy from the days of Beit Sheni. And we have a fairly good idea of what those borders are. If you take a tour of the Old City, Fegi Kana didn't come today, she was here the last few weeks, but she gives tours of the Old City, and she can map it out for you, exactly where the line, the demarcation line of Kedushat Yerushalayim. And in their home, in the home of Rav Nachman Kahana, so they were always very careful in the Old City that all of the disqualifications of the Arba Minim of day one apply on day five and day six and day seven as well, because it's all Midoraita, it's all biblical. But for most of us, the remaining days is a rabbinic add-on, and it was established by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai immediately after the destruction of Second Beit HaMikdash, that we shouldn't forget that there was such a halachic animal called taking the Arba Minim for an additional 6 days. So the 6 days is Zecher LeMikdash. We remember Beit HaMikdash by taking the Arba Minim. But because it's only a rabbinic add-on, so we're lenient with regard to some of the disqualifications. For example, if you buy an etrog with a pitam, a little growth on top, and it breaks on day one, if it's cracked, it's pasul. You can't make a bracha on it. You could save it for etrog jelly, and that's where it's going to end. That's where it's going to begin, and that's where it's going to end. But if that happens on Chol HaMoed, the etrog fell, the pitam broke, you could still make a bracha on it. And there are other disqualifications. What? Well, Zev, that's what we're going to see in a second with Lulav HaGazul. So Rav Jerry Shaskas mentions that there's Lulav HaGazul, a stolen Lulav. And the question is, what is the reason for the stolen Lulav? Is the reason because it says, Ulkachtem Lachem, has to be yours. So if it's not yours by ownership, you don't fulfill your obligation. Then there's a second concept called Mitzvah Haba'ah Ba'avira. You can't be a tzaddik using an object that's sinful. So what could be more sinful than stolen goods? You stole the guy's esrog, you make a bracha. That's not going to work. You get zero mitzvah. It's not that you get a mitzvah for arba minim, but you also get an aveira for lo tigzol. You get no mitzvah. It's called mitzvah haba'aba avera. And this really impacts on whether the remaining days of Chol HaMoed, if you take a stolen etrog, can you make a bracha on it at all? Because we know that the din, the halakha, ulekachtem lechem, yours, does not really apply for the mitzvah der Rabbanan. So while it may not be a nice thing to do, to steal an esrog on Chol HaMoed, but if you happen to have stolen the esrog and you made a bracha, you fulfill the obligation, but you have to return the esrog, obviously. That's one opinion. The other opinion is, one second, mitzvah haba'a ba'avera applies whether it's a d'oraita or the Rabbanan, and therefore you're not going to be able to use that stolen etrog on the fifth day or the sixth day or the seventh day either. So that's a machloket between the Rambam and the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David. That's a whopper of a shir in the yeshiva that when they studied the third parak of Masechet Sukkah, Lulav HaGazul. So this understanding is very important. So now comes Yom Tov Sheni. What does Yom Tov Sheni mean in Chutz Laretz? If you have an etrog on day one in Chutz Laretz, in New York, Los Angeles, Tokyo, wherever you are, you have an lulav. And now you're going to take the lulav on day two. Why? Are you taking it on day two because day two is a carbon copy of day one? You made kiddush on day one, and if it would be Pesach, you'd make another seder on day two as if it's day one. Yom Tov Sheni is a carbon copy of day one. So all these strict restrictions for disqualification of lulav and esrog apply on day two, just like day one, because day two is just a carbon copy of day one. Or is Yom Tov Sheni and Chutz Laretz vis-a-vis Arba Minim Chol HaMoed? It's not really Chol HaMoed. You're going to shul, you're davening Yom Tov, you're not wearing tefillin. No, tefillin we don't wear anyway, but whatever. I mean, those people do wear tefillin Chol HaMoed, so that nobody wears a Yom Tov Sheni, for sure not. So what's the deal with, and what would be the ramification if something would go wrong with the esrog, can you on Yom Tov Sheni in Chutz Laretz, can you make a bracha on it?
It's a big deal when the first day is on Shabbos.
We're getting to that. Okay. We're getting to that. It's a very big deal. Because the first day is Shabbat, and the halacha is that we don't, because of a gzeira, we don't take the Arba Minim on Shabbat, so that year, there's no mitzvah of d'oraita. Everything we're doing is only rabbinic. Now I'll tell you, when my eldest daughter was a Shlichat Bnei Akiva in Antwerp, Belgium, many, many years ago. So we called up the day before Yom Tov, just to see how things going. So she says she's busy at the Sniff, at the Bnei Akiva. What are you doing? Selling Arba Minim. Busy with Arba Minim, she said. Busy with Arba Minim. So I said, oh, you're selling Arba Minim? She says, no, I'm paskening on the Arba Minim. And my daughter tells me, I'm paskening on the Arba Minim. I said, there's no poiskim in Antwerp. If somebody has a shayla and an esrog, she says, Abba, this year, first day is on Shabbat. So everything is suffik the Rabbanan. So I paskin lakula on everything. And everything's. Yeah.
Back to the etrog.
Yeah.
What about one that you borrow from someone?
Yes, very good question. A borrowed esrog cannot be used on day one. A borrowed esrog can be used for the rest of. Why? Because the word lechem means your personal ownership. So what happens when a person does not have his own etrog? And that has happened in the course of Jewish history. So you have to take it or be given it as a gift. Now there the Gemara says that it could be a matana al menat lahachzir. It's a returnable gift. So you're giving it as a gift for a moment. You say the bracha, you give it back to him. That was, there's a story of the Gemara of Rabbi Akiva and some of the Tanaim on the way to Rome to beseech the Roman government, you know, to relax some of the restrictions. They were on a boat. The only one had a Arba Minim. And from there we learned the story. Each one gave it over as a matana, to the next one. And this was done in Bate Knesset. The shul buys an etrog or two or three. Everybody picks it up and they own it for that minute. And then they put it down. In Kibbutz Dati, what was that?
Children
is a problem on day one if they take the esrog and b'matana because they may not be able to give it back because they're children. That's why on day one, if you have children who don't have their own etrog, they should make the bracha after all the adults in the family have already been yaitzev, made their mitzvah. Then you can give it to a child under bar mitzvah. And that's clearly an issue. There was a There was a situation here in Yerushalayim many years ago where the Esrog people jacked up the price, as they like to do, you know, because there's, you know, windfall profits in the Etrog business industry. So the Ger Rebbe made a restriction that nobody in Yerushalayim, the Ger Chassidim, are not going to buy Esrogim, and the shul's just going to have about 10 Esrogim where we're going to line up and make the bracha. And this was just, you know, that's about 10,000 Esrogim down the tubes. And the prices went down very, very quickly. Very, very quickly. I mean, this is based on a Gemara with regard to fish before Shabbos, where one of the Amoraim said, Medigzera, nobody's eating fish to Shabbos because the fish, you know, the market prices were jacked up artificially. And that's how they... You know, the law of supply and demand, and some, you know, the Lay Israel have clout. And that's what they did. The Ger Rebbe did this, and it worked. It actually worked. So now, the question is, on Yom Tov Sheni, in Chutz La'aretz, what's the story with the status of the Etrog? Does it have to live up to all the restrictions and all the halachot of day one? Or is it like Chol HaMoed, for that matter? So the Rav's father claimed, it was Rav Moshe Levi Salvechik, son of Rav Chaim, he says it's a carbon copy of day one. And all the chumras, all the strict restrictions apply for day two as well in Chutz La'aretz. And the Rav disagreed with his father. And he said as follows, that the upshot was that Yom Tov Sheni in Chutz La'aretz is Chol HaMoed, vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Arba Minim, not vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Sukkah. Why? He said, those... mitzvah, what is Yom Tov Sheni? He says the Kedushat Hayom, the sanctity of the day, goes over to the next day. Today is the 15th of Tishrei. And tomorrow, the 16th, is like the 15th of Tishrei. That has to do with Kedushat Yom. Everything that's linked to Kedushat Yom gets done over. So, lighting candles, Kiddush, the davening, everything. Isa Malacha, that you don't do Malacha on the second day. This all gets carried over to the second day because that's all linked to the concept called Kedushat Yom. There are two types of mitzvahs of Yom Tov, says the Rav. Those mitzvahs that start at night and those mitzvot that start in the daytime. Only a mitzvah that starts at night is linked to the sanctity of the day. So Sukkah starts at night, Basukot Teshvu Shivat Yamin. But when does the Shivat Yamin begin? With the onset of the Chag. So therefore, there is a concept of Yom Tov Sheni at the tail end of Shmini Atzeret. That just like this Yom Tov Sheni from the 16th to the 15th, there's Yom Tov Sheni from the 22nd to the 21st of Tishrei. And that's why the halacha is, you have to eat the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Because it's Yom Tov Sheni of Hoshana Rabbah. But Lulav does not start at night. It says, Ulakachtem lachem bayom rishon, bayom velo balayla. And therefore, the mitzvah is not linked to Kedushat Yom. It's just attached to a date of the 15th of the first month, of the seventh month. So that mitzvah is not, if it's not linked to Kedushat Yom, does not carry with it Yom Tov Sheni. So the second day of Yom Tov, the 16th of Tishrei, for all purposes of the Lulav, it's Chol HaMoed. And therefore, if the pitim breaks or something else happens, you'll be able to use it. And that's why there's no taking of the Arba Minim on Shmini Atzeret. Because it says there's no Yom Tov Sheni whatsoever vis-a-vis the Arba Minim. And the Rav argued with his father on this one. Now I just want to mention that in the Kibbutz Dati movement, and today there are hardly any kibbutzim left, Dati or otherwise, that are pure kibbutz as they were 70 years ago. I mean, they've gone over to private management and private ownership. I mean, these were like, you know, heretical terms in the lexicon of kibbutzim years ago. But once upon a time, when the kibbutz movement was corporate ownership, and even in the kibbutz dati movement, in the charter of the kibbutz dati movement, it said that there were three items that would enjoy private ownership. One would be the Arba Minim, the Lulav and Esrog. One would be one's matzah, because there's an opinion that says that just like Arba Minim has to be yours, the matzah has to be yours too. Not everybody agrees with that, but there's a shita, there's a view on matzah as well, so they just wanted to cover their bases. And what's the third? The ring that the chatan's going to use for the wedding. It can't be everybody's ring. It's got to be your ring. Your ring. And you know that if you go to the Judaica museums, like at the Heichal Shlomo or in the Muzan Yisrael, in any nice Judaica museum, you're going to see community rings for Kiddushin. Community rings, and they were very elaborate. No woman would ever walk around with a whole building structure on top of the ring. It was like massive. And what they did was, they would give the ring to the chatan as a matana, as a gift. So for the moment of the chuppah, it's his. He would then use it for as kesef kiddushin, and then it becomes hers. And then she was usually polite and gave it back as a matana to the community for tomorrow night's wedding, for somebody else, obviously. So that was done. That was done. But it had to be done by matana gmura, that it was in good faith, it was a gift. It was a gift. And just the same thing with the lulav. So now let's answer Yavaksha.
Are you saying that the Rav's father would take a little Hesed on Trinitas? Are you that reasoning?
We have no record that he took a lulav and Hesed. He never explained why. He just said that he was machmer on the Yantar Sheni with regard to Psule Esrik. That's what he said. But he didn't say that he took... Right, but he didn't go that far. He did not say that his father took Arba Minim on Shmini Atzeret. The Rav used that as a clinching proof that there is no Yom Tov Sheni with regard to Arba Minim. Yeah?
Is that the wife's too?
Yeah, no, she can then take it as a matana, you know, and make a bracha, and she certainly can give it back to another adult. That's not an issue. Even though a woman may be exempt because of it's a time-bound mitzvah, but a woman can volunteer to perform a mitzvah, and the only thing left is the machloket, the dispute between Rambam and Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, with regard to the bracha. So Ashkenazim are conduct themselves that women do make the bracha on the Arba Minim. Yeah. So that's correct. That's a very good point. That's the reason why in the second night in Sukkot we make a Shechiyanu. The second night we also make Shechiyanu because Shechiyanu has to do with Kedushat Yom. That is absolutely correct. And of course we here in Eretz Yisrael do not. When I came in Aliyah, the plane was landing in Lud, so I opened the window and I threw out a few things before we hit Eretz Yisrael. The first thing was Yom Tov Sheni. Goodbye. Goodbye. Gone and forgotten. Gone and forgotten. Right. So now let's answer the other question. So why does the Rambam lift Sukkah and Lulav out of context? Now we understand why he talked about Sukkah before Lulav. Because the mitzvah begins 12 hours before, approximately 12 hours before the mitzvah of Lulav. That's for sure. So, but why did he take it out of the immediacy after not doing Melachah on the first day of Sukkot? He waits till he says, can't do Melachah on Shmini Atzeret, and then comes back to it. I believe he really focused on Vayikra Kav Gimel properly. In Vayikra Kav Gimel, I'm sorry you don't have the text, but you're going to have to trust me on this. The Torah speaks about Shabbat, Pesach, Svirat HaOmer, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's all in order. It's an order of the calendar from Nisan until Tishrei. It begins with Elim Moadei Hashem Mikra'i Kodesh, and here's the list of the Chagim, Mikra'i Asher Tikru Otam B'Moadam, B'chodesh Rishon, the first month, the 14th, the 15th, fine. And it ends with Vaydaber Moshe et Moadei Hashem b'nei Yisrael. It's a beautiful ending. And that's the end of Vayikra Kav Gimel. Yet, something strange happens in the Psukim of Sukkot. After we're finished with Yom Kippur, so the next thing on the agenda is Sukkot, as we know. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, it's a very standard opening. Darber b'nei Yisrael Lemor. And on the 15th of this 7th month, Chag HaSukkot, Shivat Yamim Lashem, 7-day Yom Tov. Bayom Rishon Mikra Kodesh, Komolechet Avodah Lo Tasu. On the first day, it is no melacha. Shivat Yamim Takuvu Ishel Hashem, for 7 days there are korbanot, and it's not spelled out here, it's spelled out in Parshat Pinchas. Bayom HaShmini, also Mikra Kodesh, is another Yom Tov. Another Yom Tov on the 8th day. V'kraftem Yishel Hashem Yatzereti, and that's why we call it Shmini Yatzeret. Kom Olechet Avodah Lo Tasu. And then there's an ending. Eile Moadei Hashem Asher Tikru Otam Mikrei Kodesh Lakriv Yishel Hashem Ola U'mincha Zevach U'nesachim Dvar Yom B'Yomo. It's an ending. It's a classic ending. And here these are the Chagim, finished, end. And then after saying this, it's like, oops, we forgot something. Ach, but b'chamishasar yom l'chodesh hashvi, on the 15th of that 7th month, be'ospechem et tfuat ha'aretz, when you gather your grain, tochogu et chag Hashem shivat yamim, you have a 7-day Yom Tov. One second, we just talked about a 7-day Yom Tov. We know this already, right? Bayom Rishon Shabbaton, Uviyam Shmini Shabbaton. First day there's no malacha, seventh, eighth day no malacha. We also know that already. We've been told that four psukim earlier. Ulkachtem lachem bayom Rishon, and on the first day, take the Pri Etz Hadar, Kabbalat Tamarim, and Hatzavot, and Nachal, Usmachtem lefnei Hashem lachem Shabbat Yamim, Vachagutem oto chag Vashem Shabbat Yamim Bashana, you should have a 7 day Yom Tov, Vachodesh Hashvi'i Tachogo oto, in the seventh month you celebrate. Pasukot Yeshvu Shabbat Yamim, Kol Ezrak B'Yisrael Yeshvu Pasukot, Man Yidu Torotachem, Ki Vasukot Toshavti Et Bnei Yisrael, Botzi Otam Eretz Yisrael, and now there's also Sukkah attached to the 7 days. And it will remind you of Yitzhak Mitzrayim that we sat in the sukkah when we sat in butkalach in booths. And then it ends. Vaydaber Moshe et Moedei Hashem el Bnei Yisrael. One second. Why is there an ending in the middle of Sukkot? Why didn't the Torah just start with Sukkot? Chodesh b'yom chamishasar yom lechodesh shvi'i chagah Sukkot. Tell us that there's Issa Malach on the first and the eighth. And there are two mitzvahs that go along for the ride. There's Arba Minim, and there's Sukkah. Torah doesn't do that. It ends. Eilu Moed Hashem, Asher Tikru Otam Mikrei Kodesh. I mean, it's like the summation of how it began. Eilu Moed Hashem Mikrei Kodesh, Asher Tikru Otam Adam. Then all of a sudden, it's like, Ach, you know, there are Balei Kriya here. Women also should know the trope. Ach is a Pazer. Ach, Bachamisha, Asar Yom. What do you mean, ach, ach? 1 second. That's how the Bakari is supposed to read it. 1 second. Ach, 1 second. We left something out. What do you mean we left something out? Torah doesn't leave something out. It's obviously deliberate. And many, many parshanim overlook this. Overlook this point. Because you go through the classic parshanim, with this Rashi and the Ramban, the Rashbam, the parshanim. I'm talking about Drush. The parshanim, the ones who say pshat. He overlooked this whole thing. It waited for the great Tanakh teachers of Yeshivat Har Etzion to come around and teach us what the Torah had in mind here. So while Rav Yoel ben Nun has a few interesting things to say, the most remarkable is Rav Dr. Tamir Granot, speaks in the Yomei Yun, remarkable Rosh Yeshiva, today in Natanya, I believe that's the Yeshiva, with Rav Yuval Shurlo. So, he says as follows. Sukkot is two different things. The Yom Tov. It's one of the Moadei Tishrei, as we're calling this. You have Rosh Hashanah, you have Yom Kippur, you have Sukkot. It's clearly, it's one of the Moadei Tishrei. So you have the first of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, the 10th of Tishrei, Yom Kippur. B'chamisha Asana, the 15th, it's another Yom Tov. So it's Moadei Tishrei. This could be one theme that carries with it. Issa Malach on the first day, Issa Malach on the eighth day. Then there's another theme. The seventh month is related to the fact that the number seven is significant in the Torah. There's the seventh day, the Shabbat. There is the seventh year, that's Shemitah. So there's got to be something important about the seventh month. And the seventh month, as a Shabbat month, has its own character. Has its own character. And this is celebrated on Chag HaSukkot. One aspect of Sukkot is the fact that it's the Shabbat in the counting of the months. It's the seventh month. And Bayom Rishon Shabbaton, Ubayom Hashmini Shabbaton. And another has to do with the fact that it's part and parcel of the Chagim of Chodesh Tishrei. In order to really demonstrate this, the Torah separates two different facets of Chag HaSukkot. Now it's a full shir how Rav Tamir Granot, I'm not going to do this now, starts fitting all the pieces here into this large puzzle. Which part of Sukkot belongs to the Moadei Tishrei, and which part belongs to the fact that it's the Shabbat month, it's the seventh month. But that answers the question of why the Rambam finishes talking about the Issa Malacha, Bayom Rishon, and Bayom Hashmini, and then backtracks, as the Torah itself backtracks, to the mitzvahs of Sukkah and Lulav. And it's interesting that in the Torah, The Torah gave us the mitzvah of Arba Minim first and Sukkah second, but the Rambam puts the mitzvah of Sukkah first and Lulav second, as I already mentioned, because Sukkah begins at night and Arba Minim begins in the daytime. So Sukkah, in a sequential order, really comes first. The we were talking already about Psulei Etrog. One of the issues that we have today in buying Etrogim, I think even more so for the Aravot, because the same halachot apply for the Aravot as they apply for the Etrogim. People are going to spend a lot of money on an Etrog. One should be careful that when one goes for Hidur Mitzvah, adorning the mitzvah, one is doing something to indicate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the mitzvah is so valuable, it's more valuable than another 100 shekel. Some people, the most valuable thing in life is his money, is his possession, right? There are no few members of the human race who would subscribe to that, especially living in liberal, democratic, capitalistic societies. You get up in the morning to make more money. It's as simple as that. To part with money is not easy. It's not easy for anybody. The Rambam tells us in his Perush of Pirkei Avot, he says if you had 100 shekel, he doesn't talk about a shekel, whatever the 100 denomination is, 100 shekel, $100, and you can give 100 aniyim ve'evyonim, 100 poor people, 1 shekel, or you give one guy 100 shekel, what's better? So he says, give 1 shekel 100 times. So you might think, well, I'm not helping anybody with a shekel. What am I doing for him? What am I doing for him? If I gave one guy 100 shekel, wow, you know, he has breakfast, lunch, and dinner today. I did something for him. But what did I do to 100 people if I just gave him 1 shekel? That's not the issue, says the Rambam. Rambam says, if you pull out a bill of 100 shekel, you tortured yourself once to part with 100 shekel. But if you have to pull out your wallet 100 times to give every single one a shekel, you have developed the habit forming that you can part with money for others, for the benefit of others. This is very important. Very, very, very important. So the we talk about the mitzvah of Arbat Aminim. So we spend money for the Etrog. Now, the Etrog is defined as pre-Eitz Hadar. Hadar means it has to be beautiful. Objectively beautiful. Chazal say the word Hadar runs through the Pasuk. It applies to the Lulav, it applies to the Hadas, it applies to the Arava. And that's why the Yavesh, if it's dried out, it's invalid. Even if the Aravot are dried, Yaveshot. The Pasuk, because it has to be Hadar. The Rav once quoted his grandfather, Rav Chaim. He said, an etrog that's not hadar, it's not a disqualified esrog. He said it's a banana. The Torah didn't even talk about this. The definition of the etrog is that it has to be mehudar. But even within the fact that it's mehudar, you can even upgrade that. And we all know, you can see what's nicer. There's always nicer. The question is, how much do you have to spend for hidur mitzvah? But hidur mitzvah is between you and God, not between you and your neighbors. You're not buying 1,000 shekel esrog because you want everybody in shul to see that you blew 1,000 shekel on an esrog. That's not why you do it. If you're doing it, you're missing the whole point. Or maybe you're buying a cheap esrog, but you buy, you know, a $10,000 esrog box. Take a carton, take a box. But invest in the etrog, the object of the mitzvah. Not the auxiliary around and around. What a lulav case I have. Who cares? Take a plastic bag. Take a sakit nylon. You know, like, don't have anything. You don't need a lulav bag. You know, it's just a convenience. An esrog box of convenience. Fine, you have mehudar. It's nice. Okay, but it's between you and a kadosh baruch hu hidur mitzvah. Zekei livan veyu. That's what it is. Not for the neighbors or people in shul. So you have the mitzvah of Arbat Aminim. And it has to be yours. It has to be yours. So many times, the suppliers, a lot of times these kids are selling Arba Minim. It's very nice. It gives them something to do. B'bein Hazmanim, make a few shkalim. I have no problems with that. But where is this stuff coming from? So if it's coming with a good heksher, that, you know, it's from a pardes, from an orchard, and there were rabbanim mashgichim who made sure that this is authentic. Usually the sroigim are okay. Problem is if you buy it loose, you don't know, really know where it's from, which pardes. But the odds are that it came from the boxes that do carry a heksha. The odds are. Our rovers present a problem. Sometimes they sell it in these, pails with water, and it's all loose. Do you know that the pakachim, the supervisors of the Keren Kayemet, have caught people stealing our avot? I mean, you're not allowed to touch the stuff in many of the forests. It's not hefker, not hefker at all. And they cut it, and they steal it, and then they market it here in the city. So you don't get 3/4 of a mitzvah because the esrig and the luluf and the hadas are really with tapach sherim, but you ended up spending 50 agorot for 2 rovers that might be psulot. You get 0 mitzvah, 0. So the aravot also has to be bought with a heksha, reputable heksha. And the heksha is not just that it's an arava, that's also important, because there are all different types of aravot that are not kosher. That too I want a heksha. But I want a heksha on the financial status, on the monetary status of it. That it's not stolen goods. Very, very, very important. Because the aravot costs just a shekel or two. You don't think that, you know, this is going to be important. It can compromise the kashrus of the arba mina. Completely. Completely. So that has to be taken into consideration as well. There is a pasuk in Tilim, Perek Kavav. The Rav gave a whole drasha about this many years ago. But just lifting this pasuk out of context. Perek Vav, pasuk Vav, and Tilim. Erchatz b'nikayon kapai v'asovava et mizbechacha Hashem. I will wash my hands and I will go around the mizbeach. Chazal say this is a reference to the minhag in Beit HaMikdash of placing a ravot around the mizbeach on Chag HaSukkot. And some had the idea that it wasn't just our ravot standing there, but they walked around, they did akafah. And because of that, when we say Hoshanas, we have the arba minim in our hands, and we go around once and Hoshana Rabbah 7 times. It's because of this idea. So the Rashi says, on Tilim, Perakavav, Erchatz benikyon kapai, that the arba minim were not stolen goods. My hands were clean. My hands were clean. This is what it is. That when I went around the Mizbeach, when I was, and this is like a scene of Avodat Hashem, my Ben Odom L'Chaveroi, between man and man, was also clean. V'yitem nikiyim me'Hashem u'me'Yisrael. You have to be clean not just before God, but also before Klal Yisrael. And you cannot use something that's stained, that's polluted, as an object of a mitzvah. You can't do that. You cannot do that. It has to be Erchatz b'nikyon kapai. And remember the Rav saying that the first 3 sections of Shulchan Aruch, Or Chaim, Yerideya, Ebenezer, that deal with davening, deal with Shabbat and Chagim, deal with women issues. Everybody can be a tzaddik and frum and everything. When it comes to Chosh Mishpat, to civil law, that's where unfortunately some people fall. And they fall miserably. Whereas I once heard the Rav's son, Pastor Chaim Soloveitchik, say, when it comes to Chosh Mishpat, very, very religious people become pagans. They become Ovdei Avodah pagans, Ovdei Avodah Zara. God doesn't exist. When it comes to Chosh Mishpat, there's no God. It's a very, very terrible statement. It's a terrible statement. That when it comes to monetary issues, business transactions, not to be on the level of Eved Hashem, the way you might be for a Lulav and Esrig or a pair of tefillin. It's a sad commentary. Very, very sad commentary. But just one last point now. Source number 5. Source number 5, I'm going to read something into a line of the Me'iri that I think is true, and I think he's alluding to it. Me'iri is Rabbeinu Menachem HaMe'iri. He lived in the tail end of the Rishonim 13th century in Provence. Provence is South France. South France today, we do not have people today who say, my minhag is Provence. You can say, my minhag is Sfard, my minhag is Ashkenaz. Sfard is Spain, North Africa. Ashkenaz, what is Ashkenaz? Ashkenaz is, in the Middle Ages, is Germany and Northern France. That's Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot. What is Provence? It's somehow caught in the web between Spain and northern France and Germany. And it was an independent tradition. And there are some luminaries who were all their household names in a Beit Midrash. The Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, who wrote his comments against the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. He's from Provence. And the Meiri. Today, people look at the Meiri when they learn a Gemara, only for the last few years, because the Sefer was known but not available, but only because of Pope John the 23rd and the Ecumenical Council. And they opened up the libraries of the Vatican, and we gained access to stolen goods. That is to say, the Church robbed our communities in the Middle Ages of our Kitvei HaKodesh. Why? Because they had Mumarim, Jews who went over to Christianity, who knew how to read a Gemara, or a Rambam, or a Siddur. And they would go over every line and show that this is anti-Christian. And this would be an excuse for a pogrom, because, you know, the Christians were very, very ethical and moral. They wouldn't kill us without an excuse. So they had to have a good excuse for this. So these Sfarim, some Sfarim were known, that the Meiri wrote such a sefer on all of Shas. We didn't have it. But since the early 1960s, now it's there. In the Project Ashut of Bar Ilan, it's there. And you can read it. So on Daf Lamed Zayin, in Masechet Sukkah, it's the third parak, in Lulav HaGozel, the Meiri says, Kishuhu ba litol arbat aminim, eino mevarech ela alululav. We all know this. The bracha is not made on the arba minim. It's asher kitshanu b'mizotav v'tzivanu al netilat lulav. But one second, there's also an etrog, there's also a dasa, there's also a ravot, and why just the bracha? It deserves an answer. He says, ela alulav shu ikar ha'eged. It's the most obvious, it's the most outstanding feature, and it's supposed to be outstanding. It's taller than the rest. Because I'll use the pasuk, az yiranenu kol atze hayar, that the forest, the taller in the forest, the greater the song to God in nature. So if the arba minim has a lulav, it's the tallest of the four. V'chulam tfei limno, and all the others are secondary to it. Ho'il u'bimino gavoa miklalam, mikulam, because it's higher than the others. Im sha'ilan shalo gavoa mishar ilanot, because the dekel, the palm branch, is very, very tall. Im shehu tzarich shu yotzei min ha'eged, it has to extend beyond. If the hatasim and arabot can be three tfachim high, the lulav has to extend by at least another tefach, as the Mishnah teaches us. Uledati, my opinion, shehu gavoa mikulam be'erech hamala. There's something intrinsic about the lulav that makes it higher than the others. Vizeu ledati, shamar beminem. He says, he gets into the medrash, famous medrash, that the lulav is the palm branch of the dates. The date has flavor has taste without flavor. It reflective of the Jew who has Torah without Masim Tovim. The Hadas has fragrance but no taste. That's the Jew who has Masim Tovim, good deeds, but is ignorant, does not have Torah. The Aravot has no fragrance and no taste, is the Jew with neither Torah nor Masim Tovim. The Etrog has taste and fragrance, that's the epitome of Torah and Masim Tovim. So he says, what happens in the knotted, what do we bind together? The lulav, hadasim, and aravot. So the idea is that the lulav is supposed to give over some of its taste to the hadas person, and the hadas person is supposed to give over some of his masim tovim to the lulav person, and the lulav and hadas now have been invigorated with Torah and Masim Tovim, supposed to turn around to the Aravot and become Lubavitchers and impact on the Aravot people who may not have neither Torah nor Masim Tovim. And this all because the lulav is taller, the lulav has the greatest stake in this type of symbiotic arrangement in the lulav tzarich eged. And that's why we make a book on the lulav. What's missing? What about the etrog? What about the etrog? And not only what about the etrog? You know, in halacha, there's right hand dominance and right foot dominance. So, where do we take which hand do we take the lulav and adasim and aravot? The right hand. And the left hand, take the etrog. So it happens to be incorrect for a person to hold the lulav and the etrog with his fingers. The only time it's okay is when you're walking around for Hashanah, because you need the other hand to hold the siddur. The only time is but when you perform the mitzvah of Arba Minim, the left hand has to have a full grip on the etrog, as the right hand has a full grip on the lulav that now contains the adasim and aravot as well, and you hold it together. And this is how you shake the lulav, together, holding the etrog. So in the last line, underline, he says, ve'etrog, shuromez ala shalem b'mino. This is the most complete. It has the tam and the reach, it has the fragrance and the taste, the Torah and the masim tovim. Chalakav einon nichlal imashar. It's not shared with the others. V'loba habracha alav lemi'uto. There are so few etrog Jews around that we don't bother making the bracha on the etrog. I want to read something into this. V'etrog shehu romez al ha-shalem b'mino, chalakav eino nichlal im ha-sha'ar. This is not a compliment to the etrog Jew. This is a slap in the face. There's a real problem with etrog Jews. Jews who are such tzaddikim, and they learn, and they do mitzvot, they don't want to have anything to do with Jews who are less observant. They want to live in their own communities, they don't want to mingle, because God forbid they might be contaminated. The exposure is dangerous. It's dangerous. And here the Meiri is saying, and I think he may have had his eye on some people in his own community. This is a mi'ut. This is a downgrade. Because the etrog is going to be held in the left hand, in the weaker hand. And we're not even going to relate to it in the bracha. Because apparently, it does not do its job in influencing others the way it should. The lulav, who's got a problem, is willing to take its advantage and impact on the hadas. The hadas that has a deficiency is willing to take its advantage and impact on the lulav Jew. And the lulav and hadasim are willing to turn around and do their best on the arava Jew. That's why lulav tzarich eged. That's why the lulav hadasim and aravot are bound together and are held in the right hand. And that strength gives it the right that the bracha is now on the lulav. And the etrog, soll sein gesund und stark. You should be well. You should be well. Never ever saw a comment of any of the great Rishonim with a suggested derogatory comment about the Esrog Jew. But I think he was talking to us. He was talking to our generation as well. He may have seen it by in his own generation. And I'm sure it's nothing new. It's nothing new. The idea that if you are blessed with Torah Masim Tovim, you have an obligation to impact, to influence, to spread it. I remember we had a great rabbi in New York, Rabbi Joseph Lukstein, Zichron Lebracha, Rabbi Chatzko's father already, a lot of people, but some people here I'm sure remember Rabbi Joseph Lukstein. And he taught us homiletics and practical rabbinics at YU. I remember he talked about the issue of rabbis going out to the boondocks and becoming rabbis of shuls that were, quote-unquote, somewhat problematic. And there were all kinds of problematic shuls with mechitza, with this, with that. And he would say, don't forget, when a person who was tamei meit came to Beit HaMikdash and wanted to become tahor, he needed a kohen to deal with the parah aduma on his behalf. The only problem is the kohen becomes tamei in the process. So every kohen runs away because there's some tamei guy who just shows up for the parah aduma ash treatment. That's not the din. The din is that the kohen is supposed to come forward, and at the price of becoming tamei in the process, he has to be mitahir, another Jew. And then he will go to the mikveh at the end of the day. He'll do that. He'll do that. He'll be mitahir himself as well. But do not run away from a Jew who's looking for tahara, even though you might become contaminated with a trifle tumah as well. And I remember the Rav said this once in a conference of the Mizrahi. We used to go and give talks about religious Zionisms and comment about the Mizrahi party in Eretz Yisrael. It's printed in the Chamesh Drashot, and the Rav speaks. Many of these Drashot are in English already. The Rav was talking about the fact that he wanted that the B'nai Torah of the religious Zionist movement here in Eretz Yisrael get more involved in politics. He says, I know that politics is a dirty enterprise. He says, he said, why do we have a mitzvah of Netilat Yadayim? He quoted, because Yadav Askaniyotem, which means in the halakhic language, our hands are always moving, they're always busy, so you don't know what you touched, what you didn't touch. So that's why here and there we have the mitzvah of Netilat Yadayim. But it was a play on word. In modern Hebrew, in askan means a political macher. That's what it means. Yadenu askaniyotein. The Rav said, the issue is not to get your hands dirty. The issue is to know how to wash your hands afterwards. To be rochetz yadayim and notel yadayim. And that's why he was trying to encourage people. He says, don't worry about getting a little bit dirty. You have to get into, you have to jump into the shizzle and not be mafkir, not make it free for all for people who are less committed to what we are committed in running this country. But just remember that you have to get out of it sometime also. And you have to do it to let you die in, and sometimes even go to the mikveh and just to really become tahor. And this really was the story of what the Meiri is giving a little bit musar on the Esrog type Jews, that they should realize that there's a responsibility here and not to be outsiders, not to be isolationists and so on. And God willing, we'll have the mitzvah of Arbat Minim ulechachtem lachem, that we'll be able to perform it with the Beit HaMikdash standing, and it'll be a true usmachtem lefnei Hashem lekechem shivat yamim, a true simcha of Amidah Lefnei HaShechinah, of standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in its total fulfillment for all 7 days. For all 7 days. And we're going to get to that too soon. Okay. Shabbat Shalom. Gemar Tima Tova to all of you, and Chag Sameach. So next year is going to be Wednesday after Sukkot.